Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My name is Molly McLaughlin, and I own a company that optimizes sleep through technology, accountability, and behavioral change. Each week, I'll be interviewing world-class experts ranging from doctors, innovators, and thought leaders to give actionable tips and strategies that you can implement to become a more skillful sleeper. Let's jump into your dose of practical sleep training. Welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. My guest today is Todd White, and he is the founder of Dry Farms Wines. And why in the world are we talking about this on the Sleep as a Skill podcast? Well, understanding and navigating how to approach alcohol and sleep is probably one of the bigger topics that I speak with clients around. It is a real sore point for a lot of people. Of they want to have great sleep, but they also want to be able to be social or, you know, just have something at the end of the day to kind of wind down. But the more we track our sleep, the more we understand that a lot of the current options on the market are inevitably for most people going to result in just crappier sleep stats all around, and how you feel the next day is often going to be negatively impacted. So what do we do about it? Well, Todd is going to help fill us in on the ins and the outs of this industry and kind of what's working, what's not working right now. But first, we're going to learn a little bit about Todd. So Todd has been a serial entrepreneur and creator since he was 17 years old. Today, after 15 years in the wine business, his life is now dedicated to educating and helping people make better choices about food, nutrition, and how they think about consuming alcohol. And as the founder of Dry Farms Wine, a writer, speaker, and a leader in the organic natural wine movement, he has widely educated communities on conscious consumption. And Todd is deeply passionate about bringing people together to share love and laughter through natural wine. Now, Todd is a self-described biohacker who practices daily meditation, Wim Hof breathing, cold thermogenesis, a ketogenic diet, and daily 22-hour intermittent fasting. He is also a frequent speaker on topics including ketogenic lifestyle, meditation, and the Dry Farms Wine unique company culture. His entire team gathers each morning for a meditation and gratitude practice. I like that. And built on a foundation of honesty and peace, Dry Farms Wines has seen remarkable growth in the last 3 years, making it one of the fastest growing private companies in the U.S. without any debt or investors. Now, Dry Farms Wine is endorsed by many leading U.S. health influencers, Mark Sisson, Dave Asprey, Ben Greenfield, Rob Wolf, Wellness Mama. You know, the list is pretty much endless. And Todd has been the featured guest on many of these influencers' podcasts. So Dry Farms Wine is the official wine sponsor for many of the leading health and performance conferences worldwide, sharing over 12,000 bottles each year. Such events include Paleo FX, Joe Polish's Genius Network Conference, Low Carb USA, Health Optimization Summit, and JJ Virgin's Mindshare Summit. So there's a lot of information here coming from Todd, and he is going to really, really help go deep on this area, and I think you'll find it of value. So regardless if you go with Dry Farms Wines or not, he's going to help us understand how to navigate and why it might be important to navigate the organic natural wine industry and what that would really look like in practical application. So let's dive in. And welcome to the Sleep as a Skill podcast. Todd, I am so grateful that you took the time to be here today to help educate our audience at Sleep as a Skill podcast on this really, really important area that comes up again and again when people are trying to improve their sleep of alcohol, and particularly for you, for what difference you've made in this area of wines. I've listened to you on different podcasts, and your passion around this topic and personal commitment there is palpable. So I'm really, really grateful that you took the time to come and speak with us on this today.
I'm super excited to be here and have a lot of information to share, including the dirty, dark secrets of the wine business.
Perfect. Well, you're in the right place. We are ready and eager to hear all that you have to share. And I know you've got a wealth of information. So we'll just kick it off to you of sharing a little bit of your origin story of how you got into this, why you're passionate about this area, and why it's so important for us to know this.
Well, there's a lot to know. And we're going to talk about kind of the high level aspects. How I got into it was sort of an accident. So I've been a biohacker for probably 30 years. With a more serious commitment in the last 10 years and a hyper commitment in the last six. And so biohacking I define as the art and science of how our behavior can be used to influence our biological or neurological outcome, both the art and science. Because many biohacks don't have solid scientific evidence behind them. Same thing is true of wine. Same thing is true of most nutrition, because we can't do control group studies with nutrition. So it's just a lot we don't know. We have to depend a lot on anecdotal evidence, or we have to depend a lot on more of an artful thought about it. And the proverb I like to use most often when describing how I think about biohacking is to feel is to understand. So if we're employing techniques or tools or hacks that seem to be working for us, whether that's for sleep or drinking or fasting or, you know, dietary programs or fitness, whatever's working for us, because we're all different, we can feel when we're in touch with our body and when we're eating correctly and drinking correctly and sleeping correctly, we're in touch with our body. We can feel whether things are working. So I became therapeutically ketogenic about 6 years ago. I'm no longer therapeutic today. I'm what I would call modified ketogenic diet, which is just super low carb, moderate fat, moderate protein. Therapeutic ketogenic diet is very high fat, moderate protein, very low carbohydrate. So when I became keto about 6 years ago, I found that for whatever reason, and this is not an uncommon response to people become ketogenic, I had a more adverse relationship with alcohol. And I'm only a wine drinker, so I just found that wines were making me feel bad. And I quit drinking for a while and didn't really enjoy that, a period I call suffering through sobriety. and then, you know, so it was like I really wanted to be able to drink wine. And wine was my only drink. I used to drink spirits when I was younger, but I haven't drank spirits in 25 years. I don't recommend them for anyone because the alcohol level is simply too high, right? And so it surprises people to learn or to hear the wine guys, they might think, say that alcohol is a very dangerous neurotoxin. It's also disruptive to sleep, and it ruins millions of lives a year, right? We'll talk about why it's important to focus on your alcohol intake, both for sleep as well as quality of life, brain health, and which is why we only drink lower alcohol wines, right? The wines I drink generally are between 9 and 11%. American wines today average around 15%. And so it's materially lower. It doesn't sound that much lower, but it's materially lower. I kind of fell into this by accident. I didn't know anything about natural wine, and we'll talk about what that means in a moment because it's a confusing term to consumers. When I say, well, I only sell and drink natural wines, and they're like, well, aren't all wines natural? And I'm going to tell you for the reasons why they're not. Less than 0.1% of wines in the world are considered natural. So it's a little bit confusing, but I began my search really not, I didn't know what natural wine was, and most people don't. And 5-6 years ago, virtually no one knew what it was. It's now because of our popularity and exposure to millions of people, and just people have learned more about it. Natural wines today are quite trendy and buzzy. But I didn't know what natural wine was. What I did know was I thought I needed to be drinking wines that were lower in alcohol because I thought alcohol was the culprit. As it turns out, there are many culprits, which I'm going to share with you in a moment. But so that was sort of how I started out. I stumbled onto the natural wine movement while I was looking for lower alcohol wines. And I didn't even know there was such a thing. I asked a friend of mine, I live in the Napa Valley, and I asked a friend who I think is the smartest person in the wine business. I said, at the time, I thought I wanted to make lower alcohol wine. Today, we don't do that. We work with small family farms that produce wines for us. And so I asked my friend, how low can the alcohol get in wine and still have it taste like wine? Because at a certain point, it doesn't taste like wine anymore, right? And so, or at least what we think of wine. So he said, have you tried any of the lower alcohol wines coming out of Europe? And I was like, no, I haven't, never heard of it. So I started on that search. And in the search for lower alcohol wines, I completely accidentally stumbled upon the natural wine revolution, which was just getting underway and really robustly in central France. And I met an American who was living in Paris named Josh Adler, who was a well-known natural wine importer into the United States. And he used to live in San Francisco and had a pedigree of culinary interest. And so started following him. And that led, again, I wasn't thinking of it as a business. I was trying to find a healthier, better way to drink for myself and to have a better outcome with less negative remnants, including better sleep. And so that was sort of the journey. And then I had made wine back in 2005 in Napa Valley. And so I knew something about enology. So I started lab testing wines and sort of quantifying them. And then I started sharing these low alcohol natural wines that were also sugar-free and the other quantifications that we'll talk about in a moment. I started sharing it with other athletic friends and performance friends and biohackers. And they're like, oh, wow, this wine's awesome. Tastes better. I can drink more of it. I don't have the typical negative remnants associated with it. And so they're like, where can you get these wines? And I was like, well, you can't. And so they're not quantified. There's no labeling on wine, no other nutritional quantifications, including sugar that's included in wine. So that sort of was the beginning of a business idea. And then we became the official wine for Dave Asprey and the Bulletproof Conference. And from there, started making my first podcast appearances on the Bulletproof Radio, and then Mark Sisson and Rob Wolf and so on and so forth. Now it's been hundreds of podcasts later, sharing this information that I'm going to share with you. But that was sort of the beginning. But to reel back sort of what's happening in the wine industry, see, the same thing that happened in wine happened in our food supply. So today there's 9 to 10 companies that produce virtually all the food that we taste or has their invested somehow in it. So there's been massive corporate consolidation around money and greed, two favorite American ideas, right? And then we like to scale Absolutely. Everything in America. Mm-hmm. Right. So we want to consolidate, fuel it up with money and scale it. And so the same thing happened in the wine business. So today, 52% of U.S. wines are made by just 3 giant companies. So when you go in the grocery store in a bottle shop and you look at these hundreds or oftentimes thousands of bottles on these long shelves, most of that wine is made by just a handful of companies. The top 30 U.S. companies make over 70% of U.S. wines. And so, and the same thing is happening globally. I mean, so this is not just an American problem. You have large global producers across Europe who also import the majority of wine into the United States, right? They're just massive wine factories. Same thing you have here. So here's how wine is sold. I'm talking about commercial wines. It's sold through story and pedigree, right? And so, and what the label looks like. And through independent third-party ratings, this is how wine is sold. And so, because when you go in the grocery store, wherever you buy your wine, you have no idea what to buy, right? So you start looking at labels or perhaps a third-party rating system that gives it a point score, or so on and so forth. The problem is you have no idea what's in the bottle. So when you look at the bottle, it's got a pretty label on it. Maybe it's a picture of a farmhouse or a chateau, and that's what they want you to believe, that you're drinking from a farmhouse when in fact you're likely drinking from massive wine factories located in Central California. So the problem with that is that you can't make wine in these volumes without the use of chemicals and additives. It's just impossible. You can't make wine safely. When I say safely, I mean safely on behalf of the company making it, right? When they're making these large volumes, massive volumes of wine, they have to use chemicals and additives. So here's what the public doesn't know, unless they heard me speak about it. Although it's been getting more common mainstream press in the recent last couple of years, but there's 76 additives approved by the FDA for use in winemaking. Now, many of them are natural, and many are not, and a handful are very toxic, right? And so the problem is you don't know if you're drinking that handful or not. You don't know if you're drinking a natural additive or a chemical one, like ammonia phosphate or dimethyl dicarbonate, right? So, but you have no idea what that is. If wine had a contents label on it, which it doesn't, which is how the wine industry has been able to keep these additives secret, right? So in collusion with Washington, D.C. politicians, they've been able to keep contents labeling off of wine bottles, including nutritional information as well. So I'm ketogenic. I'm largely sugar-free. I'm also largely glycemic carbohydrate-free. So I don't eat highly glycemic carbohydrates either, which produce the same blood glucose effect as does sugar or fructose or glucose. And so I also don't eat fruit. And so because it's oftentimes a high source of of fructose, which actually converts to higher blood glucose quicker than glucose. And so I don't want to drink sugar in my wine either. And so here's the thing. American wine companies, or this is, as I said, a global problem. In America, we just scale everything, right? And so the problem is that these wine companies are not trying to make wine healthier or better. They're trying to make it cheaper and faster, right? And so this is the primary problem, is that you've got money and greed chasing a product outcome, which is about being faster and cheaper, not healthier or better. So that's what's happening in the commercial wine industry. And because there's another problem with wine, it's the distribution system, the way wine is distributed state to state. So each state regulates alcohol state by state. There's very little to no federal oversight. The only thing the federal government is involved in where wine is concerned, the FDA and additives, labeling. So the federal government actually approves all labels. And beyond that, they have very little to do with alcohol. It's mainly regulated at the state level. And at the state level, for most states, getting wine into the state is highly regulated by distributors who control the inflow of wine into that state. And so the problem with that is that unless you're buying online, like we sell, you're not able to go into stores and get natural wines, right? Because they're very small productions. People don't know what they are. Distributors don't know what they are. So they're very difficult to find outside of very large progressive markets. Let's say New York City or Los Angeles or San Francisco or Chicago, or, you know, it's very, some in Miami, it's some in Dallas, but outside of this, San Francisco, but outside of this is very difficult to find. So if you live in Denver or you live in Charlotte or Atlanta, it's going to be very difficult to find natural wine, or Kansas City or so on and so forth. So, but before we go any further, I don't know if you have any immediate questions, but I want to talk about what a natural wine is.
That's so much amazing information. I'm so glad that you're helping to educate on this. And you're right. You were one of the first people that I heard kind of go in depth on the real deep nature that this runs, of how long it's been like this, particularly, you know, within America, certainly in this conversation and beyond, of how much the traditional wine that we might have thought of in the past, how much it's really shifted, and it's not something that we're aware of what we're drinking. And I'm so happy you hit on the glycemic element of that. We have many people here at Sleep is a Skill wearing continuous glucose monitors and seeing how that impacts their sleep. And so when you speak to that and being able to present an option besides just abstinence only, it really can help open up options for people. And I think that's really important. So I'm very excited to learn more.
It also surprises people. Look, my life might be enhanced if I didn't drink. It could be. The fact of the matter is I enjoy drinking, right?
Right.
And not everyone should drink. And so all of this kind of speak is very surprising to people, but this is just how it is. I don't think that drinking necessarily enhances your life in many ways. In some ways, it enhances my life terrifically. It's more creatively expressive. It spreads love. There is a connection between the farm and the bottle and the people and the community of sharing wine. Wine's very unique as alcohol beverages go, because when you're drinking wine from a small family farm like we drink and sell, natural wines, we'll get to that in 1 second. When you're drinking that, the same person who cultivated the vine, who harvested the fruit, who fermented the wine and put it in the bottle is the same one family that then transports that spirit and that bottle and that energy to me, the drinker. And so wine's very special in that way. The other thing, because we only drink these lower alcohol wines, wine doesn't charge you up the way spirits does. So when you're drinking our wines, eventually, if you continue to drink enough, you're just going to go to sleep. You know, where if you're drinking spirits, then oftentimes you're going to get charged up and want to go out, right? And so it's a very different alcohol experience. It's also a very different experience for your brain, these different levels of alcohol. But let's talk about natural wine for a moment, because we've used the phrase a whole lot. So natural wine is, there's presently no certification for what natural wine means. That being said, dry farm wines does have a certification process and a list of quantifications that we guarantee every wine meets. And the first one is that it's natural. But let's talk about what natural means. Natural is, however, a universally accepted term in the wine industry that has a universally accepted definition. And while it's not official or certified, everyone in the wine business and everybody in the natural wine business knows what those quantifications are because they're very simple. And it's interesting that France just announced about a month ago that they were going to be the first country to certify natural wines. And it's an important step forward in transparency, an important step forward in authenticating outside of what we do. We have a certification, as I said, but it'd be good to see countries authenticating what natural wine is and making sure that there doesn't appear to be any misrepresentation. This is a small group of 1,200 or 1,500 farms worldwide. It's less than 0.1% of all wine production. It's a small group of people. Most of them know one another and know of one another. Most of them are interconnected within the natural wine world. And so there's kind of a self-policing. We've not seen any real examples of inauthenticity, which is good. These are mainly hippie activist farmers who live on multi-generational land, who are fanatic about producing an earth-grounded product, right? So you don't really make a lot of money in the natural wine business. And the primary reason for that is because you cannot produce wine in very great volumes making natural wine without the use of additives and chemicals, as we talked about earlier. So natural wine is as follows. It is always organic or biodynamically farmed. And biodynamic farming is an advanced prescriptive form of organic farming. Number two is always fermented with wild native indigenous yeast. Now, what does that mean? Well, when you make wine, wine is made when yeast inoculates with the grape juice, which is filled with sugar, and the yeast eats the sugar as its food source. And the result of that is carbon dioxide and ethyl alcohol. That's how you make wine. So commercial winemakers, including all those wines you see in the store, commercial winemakers use a genetically modified lab-cultured yeast. And they do that for a couple of different reasons. The primary reason is much sturdier, it's much stronger, it's much easier to work with. You can make wine in very high volumes using it, as much wine as you want, because it's not temperamental. You see, the wild native yeast that's indigenous to the vineyard where the grape is grown. So every grape berry at harvest in the world, every grape berry has yeast on the skin. It looks like a little waxy white film, but it's actually yeast that's been collected in the air naturally, wildly, and indigenous to that vineyard. And natural winemakers always, it is a rule of natural winemaking, always use this native yeast that's on the skin of the grape for a spontaneous fermentation. What commercial winemakers do when it comes to fermentation is they press the juice, then they pour sulfur dioxide in the wine juice, in the grape juice, to kill the native yeast, and then inoculate it with this lab-grown yeast. And again, the reason they do that, they don't want the two yeasts fighting each other. So they're going to kill the native yeast and then inoculate with this lab-grown yeast. It's easier to work with. You can make wine in much larger volumes. It will also withstand a higher alcohol environment than a native yeast. Native yeast will die in a high alcohol environment. These lab-grown yeasts are modified to withstand a higher alcohol environment. And then lastly, you can get these yeasts in different flavor profiles. So let's say that you have an industrially farmed grape from Central California, but you want it to taste like it's from Italy. They have a yeast for that. Right, so flavor profiles for it. So that's the reason that they're used. Finally, there's no additives in natural wine. So the 76 additives that we talked about that the FDA approves, and in Europe it's 56 approved by the EU. There's no additives. And of course, with organic or biodynamic farming, there's also no industrial farming practices. So there's no pesticides, herbicides. Roundup is the number one herbicide applied in U.S. vineyards, and it's quite prevalent. Because it just makes for early, easy farming. Now, moving on to dry farm wine certification, let's talk about that for a moment, because it begins at natural wine, and then it's several steps above that, because we have health and purity standards that we believe in that elevate just beyond natural. So first of all, we require that all wines are also dry farm, name of our company, Dry Farm Wines. What does that mean? It means that the grapes are grown without irrigation. And so Irrigation is bad for the planet. It's bad for the vine. And in fact, it reduces the polyphenols, the healthy compounds that are available in the grapes. Because when you pump a grape berry full of water, it might not surprise you, it dilutes everything in the berry. Now, why do you irrigate? It's illegal to irrigate in most of Europe. Over 99% of U.S. vineyards are irrigated. You irrigate because it produces a higher yield. It's easier and cheaper to farm. And fruit is sold by the ton. And so if it's filled with water and a higher yield, it sells for more, right? So irrigation is about ease of farming, money, and greed. So we don't allow irrigation on any of our vines anywhere around the world. And then you have industrial farming practices, you know, which lead to also less healthy fruit. So we've got organic or biodynamic farming, no irrigation allowed in our wines. They're sugar-free, lab-tested by us and published by us. So we publish lab tests on every wine. They're lower in alcohol. We don't allow wines over 12.5%. As I mentioned, most of the wines I drink are between 9 and 11%. And then finally, we don't allow the addition of any additives. And so when we think about sleep, the two things are going to interrupt the sleep quality from wine that we know for sure. We don't know about the other additives. They may be imparting other negative effects. Nobody knows because there's no lab testing to show the ill effects of these additives. But what we do know is that higher alcohol is certainly disruptive to sleep. And we know that sugar is disruptive to sleep. And so these are the two areas where I think if people are concerned about their sleep and they want to drink wine, right, then they should be focused. Whether they get wine from us or not doesn't matter. They should be focused and conscious of the amount of alcohol that's in the wine. And then, you know, they should be conscious, although there's no way for them to know how much sugar is in the wine. And to give you an example, so we don't allow more than 1 gram per liter. And to give you, at the serving level, by law, that is statistically sugar-free. So we can call the wine sugar-free because it's so low. At 1 gram per liter, or most of our wines are 0.2, 0.3, 0.4, 0.5. They're less than a half a gram per liter. We will allow up to 1 gram per liter, but almost no wines make it there, right? And so we did do a test a few months ago of the top 20 best-selling wines in the United States. Of the top 20, only 2 met our criteria for sugar. So,
wow.
Now, that doesn't mean that they're super sweet or that, you know, that they're super high in sugar. It just means it didn't meet our criteria, right? We're super fanatical about living a sugar-free life. I happen to believe that elevated blood glucose and the hyperproduction of insulin is the primary cause of most chronic illness. And so in an effort to live a healthy, long life or an extended health span, I don't focus as much on lifespan as I do health span, right? So I want to live a long, healthy life. And I believe that sugar is the single most addictive, destructive, most widely abused drug on the planet, right? And it's just everywhere in everything. And it leads to a whole host of health problems. Now, alcohol is also very dangerous and addictive, right? And so we have to be careful with that as well. But which is the reason, again, that we focus on low alcohol, sugar-free. Also, there's this nasty combination that also happens. And again, there's no real evidence on this, but anecdotally, you know it's true. There's this nasty combination that happens when you combine sugar and alcohol together, right? And the most poignant example of that is if you were to drink a shot or two of tequila with a lime and some salt, as an example, how you would feel both during your buzz and the next morning would be very different than if you had 2 margaritas.
Yes.
Right?
Absolutely.
Very different. And so when you combine alcohol and sugar together, you just get this particularly nasty after effect. And so I don't really know why. I just know anecdotally what I just told you is very true. And anybody who's experienced both shots of tequila or margaritas knows it's true. Right? That's sort of a little bit of the story about what we do and why we think it's important.
Oh, wow. Well, there's so much there, and we're certainly aligned on that topic of sugar-free living. And I think you're speaking on something that so many people are even still have confusion around. They might, when you discuss something like that, including conversations around wine and alcohol, I think there's a lack of knowledge or education around even what the average person is eating. They may, I don't have a lot of sugar. I don't do donuts. I don't do candy bars. I'm not doing that sort of thing. So I'm good, and not realizing how many of our foods do, maybe they don't look how we might think of for sugar, but they become that. And that includes so much this conversation around wine. And I think so many people don't realize just how much sugar content is in the average wine. And to your point, it's kind of by design, because it's not something you can easily turn around the bottle to see anyway. So the fact that you're bringing this education and then offering alternatives is a big deal, because, you know, we work with different clients, and often it can be the big approach with sleep as a skill is to bring technology, accountability, and behavioral change to the area of sleep. And a big part of that behavior is to lower sugar, be mindful of the timing of some of these foods and drinks. And so for many people, it becomes a non-starter because they don't want to give up the, you know, the fun that comes from being able to have a drink with people. So we want to be able to find that happy medium. And I'm so grateful that people like yourself are standing to really disrupt this industry and provide optionality and peace of mind so that we can have some other options and know that they're tested and have gone through this series of vettings. So if people are now hearing this, they want to, you know, really learn more about dry farms. Is it something where, because of what you were discussing about the difficulties of creating large amounts of this, we can't necessarily find it in our stores, so we need to go and really explore this online? And part of that is knowing that then, because of that, we're getting that value, that high quality elements coming directly to our door. That's kind of the setup with dry farms.
There's only one way to get dry farm wines, and dry farm wines, certified wines, and that's directly from us. But let's talk about how you might find natural wines if you didn't buy it from us, you know, and how to think about that. Because I think it's really important to educate people.
Yeah.
We touch millions of people with our wines. We have hundreds of thousands of customers. It's like, you know, so I'm not here to sell wine. I'm here to educate people, right? And try to help them think about how to live a healthier life. And so, if you didn't buy your wine from us, we only direct ship to consumers. So the only way to get our wines are go online at dryfarmwines.com and buy wines there from us. That's the only way to get them from us. We don't sell to restaurants or retailers. But however, if you aren't buying wine from us, and you live in a major city, a big city, you can probably find a retailer that may sell exclusively or some natural wines. And you could do that through a Google search, or there's a smartphone app called Raisin that is the natural wine app globally. It works best in very big cities and across Europe. It works great in places like London and Paris and New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles. And it will list both places that sell retail natural wines as well as restaurants that may feature some natural wines on their list. And for the most hardcore natural wine retailers, that's all they'll sell, right? So most natural wine retailers don't sell anything but natural wine because they're just kind of fanatical about it. It's a movement. It's a revolution, right? Just like we don't sell anything but certified natural wines. So you could do a Google search or download the smartphone app. That's probably only going to work in kind of larger areas. If not, then, you know, you're going to, if you're forced into the store, I would recommend looking for lower alcohol. And lower alcohol is considered to be 12.5% or less. They're very hard to find. You'd have to turn around a lot of bottles. But if you're looking, you won't find any American wines. You would need to look in central France, kind of colder regions of France would be the most likely place that you would find some lower alcohol, probably not natural. But again, if it's lower alcohol, it's likely to be dry. It's likely to be lower in sugar. And it's also likely to be just make you feel better. Right? So that would be the best that you could do if you wanted to find, if you're in a restaurant and there's a wine director there and the restaurant's kind of farm to table, you might ask if they have any natural wine or ask them to find a lower alcohol wine for you. Alcohol is not going to be published on the wine list. It's something wine director or SOM or someone would have to go to their cellar, their storage area. They won't know either. They're not likely to know which because nobody pays any attention, most Americans don't even look at the alcohol stated on a wine bottle. And the reason I say stated is by law, this is another problem, which is why we test, why we do lab testing for alcohol. By law, alcohol stated on a wine bottle is not required to be accurate. And so generally it's understated, right? And so that's another collusion between the government and the wine industry. So there's a reason for that. In the 1940s, when post-prohibition wine regulations were put on the books, most of these wine regs are back from the 40s. Back then, technology didn't always guarantee the same alcohol lab result from lab to lab. And so they were allowed this variance to sort of accommodate for that. Well, today, that's not true. But the wine industry doesn't want to change that, right? They still want that ability to have that variance and to most often case round down the amount of alcohol that's in it. So, which is again why we lab test for alcohol, so we can be certain that we know exactly the alcohol content. Because wine, the alcohol content affects the taste. Not only does it affect your health, but it also affects the taste of the wine. The more alcohol, the hotter the wine is, the less food friendly it is, and the more dense it is. And if you eat the kind of diet that we eat, which is fresh, light, raw, whole, non-processed, sugar-free, then you want your palate sort of recuperates and starts to taste things differently. And you actually want things that taste lighter, fresher, less dense, right? That's what makes you feel better. That's kind of what your taste is driven to. So on social, they can find us at Dry Farm Wines on all social or dryfarmwines.com. And so, and you can hear more of the story and kind of see what, also our wines are very affordable. So they average definitely. $22 a bottle, plus we pay for shipping, right? So they're quite affordable. You, to be able to buy a handcrafted natural wine product for $22 is a pretty astounding value. And the only reason that they're so inexpensive is that there's no demand for them. People don't know what they are. So Americans buy brands, right? So they go in the grocery store and they buy a brand that they know and they're familiar with. And typically, most people buy the same wine over and over and over again, right? We like to think that we're quite ambitious in our taste and culinary experiments, but most of us eat largely the same thing day in and day out. And the same thing's true for wine. We find a wine we like, we just drink it day in and day out, right? Because we're familiar with it. We know what it is. So, you know, with Dry Farm Wines, in our shipments, people are getting curated, unique bottles in every shipment. They can order some more of something if they like it, but they get a chance to experience grapes and regions of the world. We don't sell domestic wine, by the way. There are no domestic wines or no U.S. wines that meet all of our criteria for purity. And so we have 4 wine growers in South Africa and 4 in Chile, and the rest are spread across Europe. We work with about 800 very small family farms that are really committed to this way of life. So it's really exciting once you discover it and have a chance to experience it and see that, oh, wow, this isn't marketing spend. This is like you actually feel better, right?
Right.
Now, there's a lot of confusion. I want to mention as we're closing up.
Yep.
Presently, there's a lot of confusion in the market because there's because of our success and impact on the market, there's been a number of copycats, but they're not really copycats, but they're marketing something they call clean wine, right? And so this has been very confusing to consumers because clean wines are not natural wines. It's a marketing phrase. And so they're not natural wines at all. And so this, and there have been some celebrities that announced some wine brands that are clean and clean crafted and this, that, and the other, but that's not natural. This further, you know, when consumers latch on to something like natural wines and our impact in the market, then people want to follow on behind that and sort of find some way to get in on the party, if you will, without really selling natural wine. So when you see companies that use this word clean wine, this is not, don't be fooled by that. It's not a phrase you would ever hear us use because we don't know what it means. We know what natural wine is. We don't know what clean wine means, right? And so we know it sounds like a marketing gig to us. So we're the largest buyer and seller of natural wines in the world. We're very committed to this way of life. Not only this way of life, but a way of living, right? A healthy way of living in the way we eat, in the way that we practice meditation, in the way that we biohack, in the way that, you know, we're just committed to this way of life and certainly committed to hacking sleeping. I mean, sleep is clearly one of the three legs of the stool that make for a healthy life, right? Sleep is critical. If we're not getting quality sleep, nothing else is going to work. So I really appreciate the work you're doing.
Oh, well, thank you so much. And thank you so much for taking the time to share all that information. I know that was only just a tip of the iceberg of all that you, all the wisdom that you've gained since really diving into this area. So thank you so much. And, you know, some of the resources that you dropped, Raisin, the app, all that information around how to navigate these things. And I think I can certainly share, and I've mentioned this in my newsletter time and time again, that you can certainly do all of those things, and utilizing your services is just a no-brainer because it's really can set you up powerfully so that you don't really have to do too much navigation. So we're super grateful for that. And so, like you said, we can have people check out dryfarmswine.com, and we'll have the links for all the things that you mentioned in the show notes. And yeah, just really, really appreciate the work that you're doing, the passion that's obviously there. And like I said, before I'd heard you speak, I knew that I didn't feel good after certainly different wines, but I didn't know so much of what was behind that. And so it really was very illuminating. So I thank you for the work you're doing.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me on today.
Oh, thank you. You've been listening to the Sleep is a Skill podcast, the number one podcast for people who want to take their sleep skills to the next level. Every Monday, I send out something that I call Molly's Monday Obsessions, containing everything that I'm obsessing over in the world of sleep. Head on over to sleepisaskill.com to sign up.